Hi, and welcome to Season 2 of Big Sound Small Town, the podcast that spotlights the talented and diverse musicians in small towns and communities. This season, we're branching out to include the community of people who make it possible for musicians to be able to perform their music, the producers, the recording engineers, the venue owners, and many others, and as always, the small town musicians. Remember, small town doesn't mean small talent. Hear their stories. Today, Big Sound Small Town is in the pink room of the Big Bass Studio. This is the COVID-19 sessions, I guess is what we'll call this. And my guest today is bassist Philip Simmons. Welcome to the show, Philip.
Thank you, Sandy. Good to hear from you.
All right. Well, let the people know, are you working these days?
Well, I'm not. Had a lot of shows that were scheduled through March and April and May, and most of those have been canceled / postponed until we get through whatever this madness is.
Right. Well, now, how about your day job? Is it still working?
Yes, I do have a day job. I work for a magazine distributor at some of the local stores around town, and actually a lot of people in Shelby and Gastonia, you probably see me relatively often. We are still working hard at putting our magazines out. We've been deemed essential employees. Yep. So our work has not stopped.
But you are staying safe, I hope, my brother.
Yes, trying to minimize cross-contamination. I wear my gloves every day, wash my hands more times than I can count, and so far so good. I've been able to avoid any infection.
That sounds really good. All right, so when this is over, do you have a musical act that you're working with?
I do. I actually have a few acts that I've been playing with. If anybody keeps up with Scott Moss,
sure,
which I'm sure they do. I've been playing with Scott for a number of years now. I am a $100 handshake, I think, is what we're calling it. I have some shows with Scott that were scheduled, that were hopefully be rescheduled. I know some are looking toward the fall.
Right.
I also have been asked to join Harvest and play with them some when we can get back to having some gigs.
Well, the good part is most of those band members from both of those groups have been a guest on my show, so that's good.
That's right. And I've heard some of those. They've been very good.
Well, thank you. They're Stories pretty much tell herself. I just have to sit here and enjoy them. It's the great part of the job.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Now, have you always been a bass player?
I have. I started out playing bass, and I picked up some other instruments along the way, mostly guitar, just kind of, you know, playing around and
right.
trying to do some other things. Actually, over the last few years, I've been trying to learn how to play piano just for the musical knowledge.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, totally self-taught. Never really took any significant lessons from anybody. I just like it a lot and trying to expand my horizons. But, you know, I've met a lot of folks around the area who can play, you know, multiple instruments. And sometimes I feel like I'm missing out a little bit on that. But, you know, my focus has always been on the bass, and I kind of think that way. And I've gathered over the years that some people appreciate that. You know, that's the first thing to come to mind when I'm playing an instrument. So maybe that's a good thing.
Well, I mean, I think it is. I personally like dedicated bass players as opposed to a guy like me who it's forced on a whole lot of times. And,
right.
you know, it's not, would not be my instrument of choice, but it seems like it's been my instrument of employment, which is not, I mean, I guess it's a blessing, but. As a bassist, I prefer bassists who are really bassists first.
Yeah, well, I definitely am. I started out doing that when some people that I've talked to, some of my bandmates know this. I actually didn't start playing until I was in college. I was actually staying at my mother's house for a summer, running one of her businesses at Carolina Beach, mm-hmm. while her and my stepdad were taking a vacation in Oregon, and while I was there staying at her house, my stepdad had a PV Foundation 4-string bass sitting in the corner, and I just picked it up, and I was a huge Primus fan at the time.
Right.
That's kind of a weird music to, you know, to try to kind of learn from.
Yeah, really.
But I picked the bass up one evening, and I just messed around with it. Had never picked up a guitar or anything, and I found that I could play a couple songs just by remembering kind of how they go. And
right.
I screwed around with it for about a week, and from then on, I fell in love with it. I spent a bunch of money on instruments, spent a bunch of money on amplifiers.
Sure.
And that became the thing that I spent all of my free time doing.
You know, it seems like those $100 handshakes, particularly like you and Scott, late bloomers, but then you really bloomed. I mean, both getting late starts compared to other musicians, but that to me, that is a sign for every musician who wants to be. You don't have to start when you're young to do it, and you
right.
can still take it to a really high level.
Well, you know, there's times when I kind of regret that I didn't do it earlier. Like if I had learned some of the more basic things or taken piano lessons when I was a child,
right.
or been in school band or something like that, that I may be a better musician. But And I, you know, without a doubt, I probably would be.
Well, I, you know, there's a lot to be said, too, that sometimes you get directed in a unnatural way, too, that takes away some of the heart and soul of what you learn on your own.
Well, since it was something that kind of wasn't thrust on me by doing it in school or my
right.
parents pushing me to do it, it was something that I picked up later in life after I'd kind of become an adult.
Right.
And I think for that reason, it was something that I wanted to do. I didn't have any outside influence on whether I should do this or
right.
if it should be, you know, like a sport that your parents might try to get you into or something like that. It was actually something that I wanted to do, and I liked it that much, and I was willing to put the time and the effort into learning how to do it.
And
so
I think that's important. Yeah, I do. I think that's important because a lot of people start out playing the instrument and all said and done, they really didn't enjoy it, and they wind up playing something else. So, you know, it's there's pluses and minuses about it. But obviously, you liked it enough and woodshedded for a pretty good while to learn how to do it.
That's correct. Yep, that's right. And you know, starting out kind of late and being fairly green, you know, I found some other people in when I was in college, just some friends that I had in different classes.
Right.
Then I lived in Hickory for a couple of years after college, And I just, you know, had a couple buddies that I jammed with. Actually, one friend of mine who I'm still friends with, and we still see each other and try to jam regularly.
You can give him
strictly for fun.
Right. Well, you can give him a shout out.
Yeah, his name's Andy Rump. If he's listening out there, I'm sure Andy will tell you we've been playing music together for most of my life now. He's a really good buddy of mine, and there's no pressure. We don't really learn anything. We just kind of make stuff up, and
sure.
It's just something that we do strictly for fun. We've gone out and played a few times, but for me, that playing with him and our another friend of ours named Ruffin Reynolds, who's been in some local bands too. He's a drummer, and for me, that's it's just kind of a relaxing thing.
Sure.
With the other bands that I play with, it's not like I'm struggling or having to work hard or something like that. But you know, there's when you're playing with a band that's actually going out and playing and doing gigs, you've got to pack your stuff up. You got to draw the kind of logistics that go into playing with a band. And sometimes it's nice to be able to just sit in your garage with your buddies and around for fun and not really mean anything.
And I think you hit the point there. So many times, once you start doing it at a professional level, some of the fun disappears. I mean, you still love it, but some of the fun disappears when you load up, tear down, go through band members. I mean, it's, it's harder than what people who don't play understand.
Well, it can be work. Let's say we may go to a show in Knoxville,
right?
And we might have 10 hours tied up in the job and setting up and sound check and driving back home,
right?
And not that that's not fun, because it's great to hang out with. True. All those guys are my friends I'm in bands with, so I get to hang out with my friends. We have a good time. It's not work, quote unquote,
right?
But there's still work involved, and the music, actually playing the music. If you have 10 hours invested in a show, you might play music for 2 or maybe 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
At the most. So
everybody, everybody knows that you play for free, you charge them to drive, sit up, and tear down. I mean,
right. That's kind of the musician's agreement, I think.
I think it is. Yeah. All right. Let's go back to Primus. That's a strange place to start. I mean, did you start learning just Primus songs?
Well, I did. I was at the time, I was in college 93 to 97 at NC State in Raleigh.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, all through my high school years, that was the grunge era.
Sure.
The Pearl Jams, the Nirvana. I kind of shied away from a lot of the radio popular bands,
right,
at the time. So I was a big Rage Against the Machine fan.
Oh yeah, great stuff. I mean,
right, huge Tool fan.
Yeah.
Primus at the same time. I don't know what it was about them that I liked. I don't know if I could really nail it down. It's easy to say now that I liked them because Les Claypool's
right,
this crazy bass player that,
yep,
is easy to zero in on. I'm not sure that was the intent at the time.
Right, right.
I liked what he did, but I didn't really correlate it with playing like I do now. So my mindset after I started playing was a little different. And
true.
I approached learning some of those songs from, a more of a musical standpoint,
right,
than I did when I was a fan.
True,
so
true,
when
yeah.
I started, what's that?
I said, yeah, that's true. I can see where it's totally different when all of a sudden you realize that, hey, this guy's really the heart and soul of that band, too.
Right,
so,
right. It was, some interesting stuff to learn, and I have to say, that's where I first started. But as I got to playing bass a little more and really listening to more music, and then when I started playing with other people, you can't really walk into your practice room and look at your band buddies and say, hey, let's play one known as Big Brown Beaver.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a little weird thing to try to do. So when you start playing with other people, you really got to kind of simplify.
Right.
And really, over the years, that's kind of been my mantra, is try to get simpler and more simpler. And that really has allowed me or shown me how to, think of the bass as the accompaniment instrument that it should be.
Exactly,
right?
Yes.
It has a place that it fits in songs, and you really need to keep it there for the for the betterment of the song.
I totally agree. You know, there's a thing about a pocket and a thing about a groove that a lot of fantastic players just never understand.
Well, you know, it took me years to learn that. And you can ask, you know, Roger Padgett, Luke Edwards, I mean, all those guys that I played with in Tater over the years, and a lot of people. It took me years to learn how to find my place and keep it simple and do my part. You know, when you're unsure of what to do, you end up doing too much.
True, this is true.
And over time, after listening and really paying attention and thinking about it from a more musical standpoint, you realize that, you know, your instrument has a place, and you need to keep the instrument in that place, and it really makes the song end up sounding better.
It really
when you're
does.
Not playing too much stuff.
Well, and you know, particularly from coming from a less Claypool type of beginning, you know, you would think that you would be a whole lot about bass soloing.
right. And early on, I was.
Right.
But you know, you just can't do it that way. If you want to stay busy and if you want to play with other people, you've got to kind of figure your place out. And I, you know, in that sense, I really kind of did it backwards. I learned from this guy who I didn't not. You know,
right,
I paid attention to Les Claypool, and I drew my inspiration from all the crazy stuff that he's doing.
Sure.
And then over time, I backed off on that and scaled down to what I was doing, so that, you know, at some point it's 1/4-5, you know,
right,
roots and fifths, and
yeah,
you know, play the simple thing. So it took me a while to learn that, but once I kind of had that epiphany and realized that that was what my instrument's intended for, I think it's made me a much better musician all around.
Well, it certainly made you a in demand bass player, because you played with some of the finest musicians that this town has to offer, and that doesn't come if you are not a player that people can count on playing it to fit the song. I mean, it just doesn't.
All right. Well, you know, I have been lucky all these years. You know, Shelby and Cleveland County is a great town to play music.
Yeah, it really is.
Awesome musicians. And, you know, you're right. I'd like to think that, you know, people have sought me out because they like the way that I play. I can't say that was the case early on, because I was still learning. I was still trying to figure out how all this works and playing with a lot of people over the years. And, you know, just having a lot of shows, playing with people, having a lot of shows, going out in public and realizing what you're sounding like in front of the people that you're playing in front of.
Right.
It was a great learning experience for me.
Now, do you remember the first time you played on stage? Can you remember that?
Let me see. The first time that I really played on stage, no, it's ironic, because at the time, you were kind of part of that.
Oh, really? Yeah.
I'm
well,
sure you probably remember.
Really, that was the first time.
That was, well, you know, I played a car dealership, and I played at a high school, you know, like a teaching function that some friends did. I had played a Christmas party for PPG with some guys.
Right.
I wouldn't really. I don't really count those because there weren't really audiences there per se.
Right.
But the first real gig that I had on stage, when I first moved to Shelby, I was playing with you guys in Mama Said.
That was a big, I mean, there's a lot of people there for to be your first on big stage.
That's right. We played at the Foundation
at
Isothermal College.
Sure did.
And I didn't know what I was doing. I was so lost. I can't believe you guys didn't boot me off the stage.
Well,
but everybody was so nice and very encouraging. That was the first time I played on stage. And I have to say, I wasn't nervous about playing in front of people.
Yeah.
I was more nervous about not doing a good job for my bandmates.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that. This is similar but different. I play with Cleveco now. Basically, the bass player there before me was Art Mooney.
Yep. Oh,
you know, I mean,
that's a big shoes to fill.
it is, and you know, I have never been nervous per se, but about playing in front of people, but nervous per se and filling some big shoes. So I do understand the feeling you have. And, you know, I've been doing this within my 5 years now, and I still, in my own eyes, am still under that shadow, which, you know, there's no comparison in my bass playing and Art's bass playing. They're two entirely different styles and types, and I'm just fortunate that they're fairly forgiven in my case.
Right. Well, you know, Art is an incredible bass player. I know that would be the number one thing on my mind too. I want to be able to do a good enough job so that people appreciate me being in the band. Doing what I'm supposed to do. Some of the first few years I was playing with Taylor, I've really gotten nervous playing in front of an audience. And I played in front of 10 people, and I played in front of, 5,000 people.
Sure.
I never really get nervous about playing on stage. My kind of the thing that I use to kind of talk myself into it, supposedly, or so to speak, is my philosophy is I'm the one up here doing it, and nobody else is doing it but me. So that's cool.
Yeah, it is.
As far as getting over the audience part.
Yeah.
But I do, you know, I do want to do a good job for my bandmates.
Right.
I want to make sure that, you know, that they like what I'm doing, so I can keep my job and that they have a good time doing it. I don't want to mess them up. That's the important part for me. So that's the only thing I really kind of quote unquote get nervous at.
Well, you really, locally, your bands have been pretty much big bands around here. When did you hook up with Scott? Well, did you hook up with Scott before you did Luke? Or
I did the Tater years first. When I lived in Shelby for about a year, and I met Luke at the bagel shop when he was still running the Uptown Bagel.
Right.
They needed a bass player because their bass player was moving on to some different work. And I joined up with them, and I played with Luke and Roger and Kelly and Matt Miller, too, for a few years when he was there.
Right.
We did that for about 9 or 10 years.
Yeah, y'all did a long time.
In that time, since that was such a you know, fairly long period of time,
right,
I had met a lot of other musicians around the area. And at some point, maybe 2005, maybe even before that, Scott could probably tell you better. Scott was playing in Five Point Remedy,
yeah.
I believe,
yeah.
at the time. And they played a festival, one of the Tater Fests that we threw.
Right.
And that was the first time that I'd met Scott. And, you know, I knew Scott, and we had met here and there. I wouldn't necessarily say we were close friends.
Right.
We didn't really hang out. Of course, at that time, Tater was so busy that really Luke and Roger and Kelly were my only friends.
Yeah, I do understand that.
So much. That's what we did. So I didn't really hook up with Scott until after the Tater years.
After the Tater years. Yeah. That's
Yep.
And then what? Yep. Now that wasn't a $100 handshake. Then that was.
It was not. That was a band called Evergreen.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Right. So that was. It's kind of funny because it was myself and Roger Page and Kelly Hull from Tater.
Right.
And we had actually messed around over the course of a couple of years trying to find some other people to kind of fill in the space for Luke, although. You know, all the Tater songs were Luke songs.
True,
it was really
yeah.
a new band, even though Roger and Kelly and I were, you know, still the instrumentalists.
Right, right.
I guess. We played with David Vai for about
a year. Oh, yeah, yeah.
We played with another guy named Seth Grigg, who was out of Gastonia for a short period of time. That didn't end up working out too well.
Yeah.
We played with another little guy who's actually moved to Nashville recently. His name's Trey Calloway.
Oh, yeah.
These were all singers that we, you know, just were trying to kind of feel out and see what we wanted to do, and some of them sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't.
Right.
We really didn't have a focus on what we were going to do, and then along the way Roger ended up doing a couple he did several kind of two-man shows and sometimes three-man shows when Lance Watson would come and play bass with them.
Yeah.
And they were doing that as Evergreen, and at some point Scott and Roger, I guess, at some point agreed to ask Kelly and I to come along. So Evergreen was me and Roger and Kelly and then Scott. And Roger's son Rush Paget was playing with us too for a time. So we did that for about 2 or 3 years, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that came to an end. Scott got an offer to come to go play with Big Daddy Love.
Right.
He was kind of taking off and playing a lot at the time. And Scott took that opportunity to go play with Big Daddy Love. And then Evergreen kind of dissolved after that. We just kind of all went our own separate ways.
Then what did you do in that time that Evergreen was down?
So at that time, when Evergreen stopped playing, I had everybody and their brother calling me out of the woodwork to ask me to come play. So I played with Harvest, I played with the Paris Thieves, I played with South 85, which is a band out of the Gaffney area, Spartanburg.
Mm-hmm.
Really, at that time, I was just filling in for whoever needed a bass player.
Right.
I was, at one point, my wife Terry, she would joke with me that I was, you know, I was playing with 5 or 6 bands at a time and juggling rehearsals and juggling gigs, and it was a lot of work, and it was you know, kind of took a lot of energy to do all that,
to
be all the places that I needed to be. But in that 1 or 2 year period when I was going between so many different bands, it was one of the best learning experiences, because I had to learn so many different songs. Some songs I knew, some songs that I didn't know, a bunch of different genres to draw from.
I was going to say, a lot of different styles in those bands.
Right, a lot of different music to play, and man, that really, it helped. When I came out of that and I got back into playing with some more regular acts, man, I think it really helped my playing.
Yeah,
really,
I'm sure it did.
You know, just that experience of playing so many different things, you know, really opened my eyes and my ears to play.
Obviously you've learned well, because there is about 3 bass players in this town that get work, and most of them that do are in more than one band. So obviously you've learned it right.
Well, I hope people think so. I mean, you know, any band that I've been in, I just wanted to do my part, and being with your bandmates is like hanging out with your buddies. I mean, there's some professionalism that needs to come along with it, but you're also hanging out with those people.
Sure you are.
You know, and doing things that maybe aren't so professional.
Well, yeah, this is true.
So, you need to be able to get along. I like to think that I'm, you know, I'm pretty open-minded with folks. I like to try to, you know, get along with everybody and hear everybody's different points of view. Maybe that's a scientist in me that's, you know, trying to absorb more data.
Right, could be.
But, you know, I hope people appreciate that, I appreciate that people, you know, call me and want me to come play and kind of make me feel needed.
All right, this is just for geeks. Well, wait, first, we're talking about hanging out with musicians. You know, musicians are different than other people.
Uh-huh.
Most of them are a whole lot of fun, pretty funny, pretty funny people. But you have to hang out with them a little bit to understand that.
That's true.
And it's something that a lot of people miss by not spending their time around bands. I mean, a lot of times bands get a lot of negative stuff that goes with them, but really, really, it's just a lot of fun. The camaraderie with other musicians is just, you know, really good.
Yes. Yep. I have met a lot of great folks over the years, made a lot of good friends. You know, that's, I'm not originally from Shelby, although I've lived here since 99.
Me either.
I'm actually from Mooresville, just 40 miles down the road, far at all.
No.
But, you know, with job situations and band situations, my wife and I, we've had opportunities to move from the area, try to start a life somewhere else.
Right.
And whenever we talk about it, we always end up coming back to all the friends and people that we've met over the years, all the great things that have happened, you know, really because we live in this small, awesome town that we live in.
This is true. I mean, I agree. I didn't grow up here either, but I am telling you, this is... if you like music, And it's a good place. If you, the people here are good. It's a good place to live.
It is. It is. And we're glad that we stayed. And, you know, our house is paid for. We'll probably be here until old and gray.
So. That's great. That's a wonderful thing. All right, let's do some geek stuff. So, what kind of base are you, what is your go-to base these days?
Oh, well, I would love to talk about gear. Most people have seen me play it because it's the only base that ever leaves the house. I have a four-string Benavente, which is a base made by a guy named Chris Benavente. He lives in Oregon and makes basses. That's all he does is make basses and guitars. He's been in business since probably the early 90s. You know, over the years, I've owned the only kind of mainstream bass that I've ever really owned is a Rickenbacker.
Right.
I know a lot of bass players will probably kind of scowl at me for saying that I've never owned one, but I've probably owned every other kind of bass that there is.
Right.
I've played through every amp and speaker cabinet that you could probably think of. Probably in 2008, I settled on a David Eaton amplifier.
Yeah.
And cabinets made by Nick Epifani out of New York.
Sure.
And most people that have seen me out carrying my stuff will see me out carrying my amp in one hand in a little bag, and I carry my 1x12 speaker in the other hand, and that is the rig that goes with me 99.9% of the time. The Benavente 4-string, which is pretty much a Fender Getty Lee copy.
Right. It's a jazz-based.
It's a jazz
style. Jazz style, yeah.
Yep, got jazz pickups. A lot of people always ask me, why has it got so many knobs on it? It's got an active preamp in it with bass mid and treble controls.
Right.
A pickup blend and a volume. So most people see my bass and they're like, I can't believe your bass has got all those controls on it. What can those possibly do? But I usually run them flat.
Yeah.
I play with flat wound strings because I like the fullness and the old school sound of flat wound strings. So I rarely change my strings.
Yeah.
I play this 4-string. I've had 5-strings and 6-strings and fretless basses and uprights and all kinds of stuff over the years. But the 4-string is what I like to play. It's the sound that I've kind of settled on over the years.
How about it? Do you run a effect board of any type?
I don't. I have some. I have a multi effects pedal that I play with my friend Andy and Ruffin that I mentioned earlier. Really for messing around. But most of the bands that I've played in fact, nearly all the bands that I've played on a professional level with, at least going out and playing shows.
Right.
You know, from my experience, the effects don't tend to add, they tend to take away.
Right.
I'm a purist. I like when I'm playing with a band and my bass is there to hold up the bottom end, then I want the sound to be pure and full and clear, and that's what I go for. So I plug my bass into the amp with a cord, a monster cable, and that's all that I do. I don't do anything else.
That's great. You know, bass players are really lucky these days. I also play a rig similar to what you do. Mine's Aguilar with a tone hammer head, and it's 2.5 pounds, and it's a 500 watt head. And my speaker is 15 pounds, and sometimes I have two of them, but depending on the job, most of the time I can get by with the one. And that's great compared to the days of hauling 150-pound Ampeg just cabinet. So
and I had those days too, you know. But it's a lot easier to have really heavy gear if you don't have to take it anywhere.
Exactly, right?
So it's wonderful to have an 8x10 or 2 4x10s if you can just leave it at home and not have to cart it anywhere. But if you're schlepping your own gear around you know, the state or the area, then you need to take something that's reasonable to move around in. So that's why that was the biggest reason for going with the small setup that I have.
Same way with me.
It helps me also keep my stage volume to a reasonable level.
True.
You know, it can't be too boomy, can't be too loud.
Right.
So, you know, the small rig initially was for simplicity, just for not having to carry a bunch of stuff around. But I got quality stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
So and really, really good tone coming out of
that's,
it.
That's the key. You know, it's maybe I would feel different if I had a bass tech. Roll the stuff out. I might feel differently. But I'm pretty happy with the lightweight bass world these days.
Yeah. Well, I've been using this rig for so many years now that I've gotten so used to how it sounds that I've actually played some other shows where there was a backline supply.
Right.
And I had to play through somebody else's stuff, and you know, a lot of times it's a 4x10 or an 8x10 or a 2x15 or something gigantic.
Yep.
And man, I just, you know, I can dial my sound in and get it pretty close to how I like it, but nothing that's going to make me satisfied like my own.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I'm
even when there's backlines, a lot of times I'll try to bring my own stuff just in case.
Yeah. I mean, I have a preamp that if I can't take my own, at least I try to take the preamp, which is similar to what I use, and run it through the back line, whatever the deal is. But you know, you get used to your tones, and bass tones, they vary, but not, there's not as much variation as in guitar tones. I mean, you got you know, you got maybe 10 go-to type rigs, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, well, you know, the lower bass frequencies are a different animal than playing up on the high end.
True.
You know, you just, if you don't have just the right effect going or just the right sound going, you kind of can get, it can kind of make things muddy, right?
It can, yes, so, it can.
That's why I try to keep my bass tone nice and clear. A lot of fundamental. I haven't over the years. It's nice. You can sit with your effects and play in your house or play with a drum machine and where you can hear all those frequencies. But when you start adding guitars or horns or vocals or some of those, you know, higher end frequencies, you know, then you just end up covering up all of your affected sound. So.
Sure.
I had some times where I tried to do that over the years, but inevitably those things just end up sitting at home and I just take the bass and the amp and the speaker cabinet.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, what does the job?
Yeah, and I, there again, is probably they know the tone and the sound they're going to get when they hire you, so there you go.
Right.
It's not crazy. No, and it makes it easier to work. It really does.
Right, exactly.
Philip, I appreciate in this busy world you taking the time to do this.
Absolutely, man. Thank you. I love the podcast. I've listened
Thank
to
you.
Several, and man, what a great thing.
Thank you. All right. Well, I'm sure we'll check back in the future and see how things are going when this all lifts up. But I do thank you for doing this.
Absolutely. I will. You know. We'll try to spread the word when gigs start rolling again and we all can get back out in the public. But until then, we'll just be woodshed.
Yep, sounds good.
All right, thank you, Sandy.
Thank you.
That's all you wanted, was a place to call your own. Washed in the neon in that big silver moon. Your thoughts go dancing so far away from home. Just like a memory, the figures in it's gone. Now they're all smiling when they mention your name. Something you never thought you'd see. Everyone's hoping that your dreams would all come true. Except for me. Let me guess, I've heard this one before. Comes rushing back at the slamming of the door. Pride's a reason good enough to cling to. Reason or not, it's clinging back to you. Now they're all smiling when they mention your name. something you never thought you'd see. Everyone's hoping that your dreams would all come true. Everyone except for me. Sometimes it's easier to quit before you start. You never had a chance at all. I said I've told just like bottles on fields just to watch them fall.
Not the kind you hear today.